Hey, I appreciate your time.
No, thank you for doing this.
Yeah, of course. So if it's fine with you, I'd like to jump into the interview.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, great. So in your press release, you mentioned that you secured funding for two Florida projects at Tyndall and Eglin Air Force Base. Can you give a few details about those projects?
Yeah, so on the Tyndall part, that is really the one that we would highlight. On the Tyndall one, there was an item that was needed. It was an unfunded need by the base, and it was a fire and crash rescue station. The one that's there now is kind of outdated, and so that was able to be secured. And then on both Eglin and Tyndall, and just system-wide, I didn't personally secure it per se. I mean, we're all involved in it, but one of the things that I think is really good out of the omnibus that passed was the pay increase for members of the military that have, you know, really seen their pay kind of slip in comparison to the cost of living. And then obviously the decision made earlier this year to bring an unmanned vehicle squadron into Tyndall is huge for the community and for the impact that it's going to have moving forward. So I think those are really positive developments in that budget.
How much funding was secured altogether for Eglin and Tyndall?
Well, remember, part of it is coming out through the the general defensive probe, so it goes into the program. So, for example, the F-22 maintenance program, this is an airplane that's no longer being made, but it has to be maintained,
mm-hmm.
and it's one of the places. So that maintenance program has been funded once again, so that benefits Tyndall, because it's one of the three or four the domestic side places where those things are, where the Raptors are based. And the 325th, the fighter wing, is the host unit for that wing here. And so it has a huge economic impact on the region as a whole. The other is, you know, the continued the bringing in of the new squadron. Some of the work that has to go in place now for the unmanned vehicles to be sighted. All that is that process has now begun in terms of the site planning and the like. So, again, that's for the program at large.
Mm-hmm.
But it will directly benefit Tyndall.
Okay. So the fire and crash rescue station at Tyndall, is that sounds
that,
like it's going to be...
That's Tyndall-specific, that's correct.
Yeah, is that going to be, like, upgraded, it sounds like, from the appropriations?
Yeah, so it'll be a new one. It'll be a new military construction for Tyndall and the omnibus. There also, the F-22 program is also getting $161 million, which will benefit Tyndall as one of the places where it's based. So all of these sorts of things, they help the entire Air Force, but because Tyndall is the home of F-22s, it has a specific impact on it directly.
Why do you think it's important to kind of boost a military like this? They're a pretty big part of the economy here in Bay County and in the Panhandle.
Yeah, well, it has an enormous economic impact on Northwest Florida in general. I mean, all of it put aside together, the last time I checked, there was close to 200,000 jobs associated with defense activities, you know, with over $20 billion of regional impact to the economy. It's over 30% of the region's total economy in terms of what it creates. Not to mention, you know, retirees that ultimately fit key roles in the community afterwards. And then from a national security perspective, the Gulf Range complex is just one example. I mean, the ability to test across, with multiple branches involved in the Northwest region is in the Gulf Coast is an enormous national treasure. It really is. I mean, it allows our airframes across multiple branches to prepare for all sorts of potential conflicts and contingencies that there's probably nowhere else in the country that has a range of that size and of that diversity and of that capacity.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why you see people from all over the Air Force come training.
Now, there's also going to be $10 million provided for Red Snapper stock assessments in the Gulf of Mexico. Can you talk a little bit about that? The Red Snapper is a pretty big thing.
Yeah, and that's important because the science is really lagged down there. So a lot of these the catch limits have been based on science that's virtually anecdotal and poorly constructed. And so any time that season is shut down, it has a direct economic impact on hotels, on the charter industry. So we're trying to inject more money so that that's more science-based. And what we're hearing from the people out there as far as what they're catching and what the restrictions that are being placed on the catch limits are not aligned. And so we want to see more science, more data, and more accurately reflected so that we're not losing valuable days every year because they're guesstimating, you know, what the right figure should be for that given year. And you know, every time they cut it short or in some cases cancel, it's devastating to the local economy during that season.
And this will be my last question about the funding. There's also $6 million for the Coastal Ocean Data System. Can you kind of explain a little bit and talk a little bit about that?
I'm sorry, you cut up on me. What did you say?
The $6 million for the Coastal Ocean Data System?
Yeah. So, again, it's the same. It's collecting the data and measuring both water quality and all the things that would impact the coastal region in terms of water quality, which is such a huge part of the economy. So whether it's the level of rise, whether it's the quality of the water, whether it's stock, we just want to see more science based into some of the decisions that are being made. Some of these decisions affect, as I said, the recreational industry. But if there's a problem, we want to address it before we have red tide incidents or anything that could potentially damage the ecosystem because it has a direct impact on the region's economy. The beaches of Northwest Florida are a huge tourist attraction. And see the impact that it has on the restaurants and on the whole and economy up and down the coast. And so what happens is any sort of negative event that wipes out a week, two, three, or a month, like happened with the oil spill almost 8 or 9 years ago, has a devastating impact on the economy of the region. You know, thousands of people and families are impacted by it. So we just want to continue to ensure that there is data and study available so we can get out in front of problems. And that when there isn't a problem, we're not limiting people's access to the national treasures of this country, the environmental treasures of this country.
Now, for my last question, I'm going to go a little off topic and ask you about this. So what's your reaction to the March for Our Lives event Saturday? You've been a pretty visible figure during the gun debate. And I was just curious about your reaction. I saw you tweeted a video about one of the mother of the Parkland teacher that was killed.
Yeah, so, look, I'm focused 100% on preventing the next mass shooting. Everybody is. I don't know anyone who's in favor of the mass shooting. That's what I'm focused on, making changes that would prevent it. And to make change in this country, in our republic, means that people who have different views on some issues have to be able to come together to solve problems on the things they do agree on. And so that's what I've been focused on, and that's what I've been working on with at least 7 or 8 of the 17 families that are very actively engaged in finding common ground. And we have different opinions on some issues. You know, I'm a strong supporter of the Second Amendment. Some of them support gun control. But we all think that dangerous people should be found and after due process, if they're really dangerous, should lose access to weapons and kill people. So we've been able to work together on that with the families, and we welcome anyone who wants to join that effort. As far as the attacks and things of that nature, like I've been in politics for a while. I have thick skin. It doesn't bother me per se. I am worried about people who have different, especially some of the students I've talked to who have different views than some of the people you see on television. And they're afraid to speak out because they know they're going to be attacked or ostracized. And that's not good because this is not a country where we should be shutting people down or trying to embarrass them into silence. You cannot solve problems in this country without a healthy debate. And you can't have a healthy debate when you immediately say that the people on the other side of the debate are evil and bad people with no credibility and no try to dehumanize them. And I think both sides are guilty of that on issue to issue. So I just think that that's not a good thing. I think that the only way we're going to solve problems is if people who have different views are able to have a open discussion and debate about them and try to reach common ground on the things we can agree on. And in the absence of that, when a forum doesn't exist for that kind of healthy debate, then people have no choice but to see some of the poison and vitriol that you see in American politics today. We've got to get back from that. We can't continue to do that. And that happens on multiple issues, not just this one. But as far as me personally, you know, I can take care of myself. I'm a problem with that, but I do worry about some of the younger people who perhaps have some different views and aren't allowed to speak at these events or are attacked because their views are not aligned with what others may think. That's not good for anyone.
Well, Senator, that's all my questions. Anything else you'd like to say or add?
No, perfect. Thank you.
Great. Hey, thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
Okay, thank you for doing this.
Take care.